Hi, it's Clint and Lyndon.
Welcome to Shove It Up Your Arwen.
As always, our opinions are our own and should be taken with a pinch of salt.
At the sound of the Arwen cow, enjoy the episode.
So, just before this starts, just need to let you know that Lyndon was on holiday for a little while. So, unfortunately, there's only me in this episode. And this is a recording of Runes Talk given at a local gathering at Northampton Pagans in Northampton Town. They meet up once a month, and I was honoured to be part of their group and do a discussion on runes and what you can use them for, so on and so forth. So please enjoy, and I hope you like it. And roll on when Lyndon gets back. He's not allowed to go on holiday again. I've told him he can't. That's it. You're not allowed. Is it working? Is it working? That sounds like every episode of my podcast that has ever been recorded. Are we on? Are we on? Hi, I'm Karen Clinton. And I can take that off now because that was funny. And I am here to talk to you about runes. Before I kind of start, does anybody know anything already? Go on, give me just a statement about runes that you know.
I usually use runes when I do spells. I write it in rune.
Oh, you write in runes? Yeah. I love that. Yeah. I do the same.
I'm learning Enochian at the moment.
Oh my God. That's brave.
Yeah. Ooh. That's my next step.
Ooh. That's exciting. That scares me, Enochian, because it's got maths in it. Oh, so the alphabet of runes. Yeah.
There's about four different sets of runes.
Yeah, there are food.
How many letters there are in them and all that side of things.
Yeah. Do you have something to add? Yeah.
I use runes for divination. I have a set of runes that I've made myself from you. Not you.
From me? oh my God.
I find it quite helpful. I mean, I'm sort of shared ancestry between Celtic and Scandinavian anyway, so I have that affinity with that side.
Yeah, awesome. Anybody else got anything they wanted to add? Yeah. So most people will have seen runes. Everybody will have seen runes, even if they didn't identify them as runes. If you've ever watched a Lord of the Rings film, you've seen runes. If you've watched The Hobbit, that's always good because the carvings in the halls of the dwarves actually spell out words, which is always nice.
And Bluetooth on your phone.
And Bluetooth on your phone is actually the initials of, what was his name, Harold Bluetooth or whatever it was. And so they are actually his initials in a bind room, which is amazing. So yes. So they're. Oh, now you're testing my brain because that's research I did a long time ago. So there are a number of runes, which is why the Othilla rune is considered hearth and home, is because the staves were made in the shape of the rune, which is. Oh, I'm recording, but whatever. Which is like a diamond with legs. So that would be the top part, and then the legs and would be the flange that things would sit in. So it's the Othilla rune, and it means hearth and home. So the rune is part and parcel of what's being created. So did you have something to add, Dick?
I see runes every day.
Every day? Every day. What is that you're wearing around your neck? Is it a bind rune?
It's a combined.
Yeah.
I was given by a friendly neighbourhood witch probably 40 years ago.
Marvellous. Marvellous. It looks from here, I can't see it, but amazingly, but it looks like an Icelandic stave rune, so it's kind of written like on a stick, like on a line and all the runes come off of it, aren't they? Is that pretty much how it looks?
I've got a set of runes that I was gifted and some dice with runes on it.
Oh, yes. Yes, marvellous. What sided dice are they? Are they eight-sided, six-sided?
Six-sided.
Six-sided. So you've got four dice with all the runes on it. Fab. So, before I start, I suppose I better begin with where the runes came from. So does anybody know the myth of how the runes came to be? A couple of people? I'm going to read it anyway. So this is from a book by Daniel McCoy, The Viking Spirit. It's a brilliant book. If you have an opportunity to get it, it's really, really good. If you've seen the film The 13th Warrior,
yep.
Which about, yeah? Mm-hmm. That film is based on an actual account of, I think he was Persian, he was Arabic at least, mm-hmm. Who was banished and sent to these lands. And that film is based on the writings that he actually made. Mm-hmm. So some of the scenes you see in those films are based on his actual writings. And this book explores those writings. It's absolutely phenomenal. Anyway, it is said that Odin was the one who discovered the runes. And I'm going to tell you how he did it. It's a rather short story, but Odin himself, the Allfather, was willing to bring upon himself unimaginable, that's too long a word for a rum and coke, pain and suffering, if it served to further his relentless pursuit of knowledge, wisdom, and power. He was obsessed with power. One day, while sitting on his throne in Asgard, from which he could see nearly anything that occurred in the entire cosmos, he gazed longingly at the runes that the Norns had inscribed in the trunk and the roots of the great tree Yggdrasil that held Asgard in its highest branches. He was seized by an insatiable desire to acquire for himself this power to write an idea and make it manifest. When Odin bent his will toward the goal, he let no obstacle stop him until he had acquired the object of his desire. In this case, he knew that that this would entail nothing short of his own death and rebirth. The customary method of sacrificing a human to Odin was to have the victim be both strangled and stabbed at the same time. Marvellous. So Odin did the same to himself, hanging himself from Yggdrasil and stabbing himself with his spear, Gungnir. It was a double self-sacrifice. A sacrifice not only of himself, but also to himself. An interesting fact about Odin is he would cast his spear over the heads of an opposing army and dedicate the lives of those that died upon the battlefield as sacrifices to him. So every death that occurred on that battlefield served only to make him stronger in the course of the battle. For no less than 9 days and nights, Odin dangled from the tree, his nearly dead body swaying in the piercingly cold wind. No one was able to offer him any food nor any drink. His mind, more dead than alive, maintained only one thought in it: power, wisdom, the runes. Then at last they came to him and filled his mind. He saw their forms one at a time. He grasped their secrets in chants, conversations, and in words of power that would enable him to put each rune to use. With a blood-curdling scream of exultant joy, he cut himself free and fell to the ground. His 9-day fast ended when he was revived by a drink from the mead of poetry. From that day, his life became like a seed that had been fertilised. One discovery led to another, and another, and another. The runes filling his world with newfound wisdom. He acquired powers that others thought beyond the means of even the gods, and it seemed that nothing but unyielding fate stood in his way. Huzzah! That's apparently how the runes came to be manifest in our world. They came from what is thought of as the well at the base of Yggdrasil's roots. The very... Sorry? The Well of Ur. Well done. Very, very good. Gold star! and they existed, but they existed in a way that could only be grasped through sacrifice. And the Norns, being the beings that they are... Does anybody know anything about the Norns?
The three goddesses of fate.
They are the three goddesses of fate. They are very much similar to the three fates in Greek mythology, only, you know, not Greek. And, you know, they're a million miles apart, but very, very similar. There's probably things that you could probably go on for ages about, but I don't have time or the knowledge to go into that, really. But I know there's definitely separations between the two. But the Norns would water the roots and the trunk of Yggdrasil with the water from the Well of Ur. And they became part of this kind of weaving of fate. And everything that is given form by the fact that the runes describe a thing that exists. So they knew them intrinsically because they are so linked to fate. Now, that's how the runes came to be. And Russ, you mentioned that there was more than one alphabet. So the one that most people know is the Elder Futhark. Have we all heard of the Elder Futhark? Yeah, that's 24. That's 24 runes. It's three sets of eight, known as the three Eats, which is just so close to the word eight. It's annoying, but it's E-A-double-T. And they are attributed to three gods. Does anybody know why it's called Futhark? Yeah, because it's Fehu, Uruz, Thurzaz, Ansuz, and Kenaz. Futhark. Oh no, Rado and Kenaz, sorry. Rado and Kenaz. So that's why it's called Futhark. The same way it's called a QWERTY keyboard, because it's Q-W-E-R-T-Y. There we go. So the reason it's called what it is because of the first few letters. That's such good English. That isn't what they would have called it. There's no way it would have been called Futhark. That's what we called it, because we've discovered it since. The language is no longer used. The alphabet is no longer a alphabet that has a language attached to it. There are no more words that can be built from it unless we build them or say them. There are inscriptions. I visited a place in the Netherlands called Utrecht, which is the capital of the Netherlands, and they have a rune stone, and it's absolutely amazing, absolutely phenomenal. On one side, there's these carvings of like people on horses and snakes and other things that you just can't make out. And then on the other side is an entire script written in runes. And what's really, really strange is, of course, that you think, oh, I've read runes, I can understand runes, I know each phonetic sound. Of course, they create words that are no longer around. So the phonetic sounds that exist in each of those letters create words that are no longer in circulation as a living language. So it's very much a bygone era. So you can use runes for a lot of things. You mentioned earlier that you write with runes. I write with runes. Me and my other half met through writing love letters in runes to each other because no one else knew what they said. And you can do that. They correspond to phonetic sounds. So yera, which is J, is also Y. So you have only, what did I say, 8, 16, 24. You only have 24 letters, but then, to be fair, no one uses Z anyway. So don't worry about it. And no one's used X for anything other than xylophone. So I think we're okay with just 24. And we are. They work really, really well as writing things down. Does anybody use them for... You mentioned the bind rune you have around your neck, but does anybody use them for bind runes?
I've used them in sigil work.
Sigil work, same thing. Yeah, so you've used them to create like a symbol from the individual runes that you've gone down. How have you used that? Have you created a statement, translated, taken letters out, translated it back into...
I mean, I'm not very knowledgeable on it. I've only done it a couple of times. I was just looking at
the corresponding terms as to what I was looking for. So a protection one, it's like a broadly, because sigils can be as specific or as broad as you want them to be.
Yeah,
so
they can.
This was just a broad, you know, protection, whereas some sigils can be, I would like to get a chocolate smoothie on Tuesday. You know, you can make it as specific as you like.
Indeed.
So I think it's just using those broad terms and then like protection of a loved one, say, so
yeah,
you know, something like that, and just putting the two corresponding terms.
So that's marvellous.
Like that, and then
yeah,
using it in a sigilly way.
That's marvellous, because you would, with regards to runes, you could do it in a way whereby the Chaos Magician would create a sigil by creating a statement, eliminating the letters. Mm-hmm. Leaving you with, say, five letters. You could then translate those letters into runes and then combine the runes.
Yeah.
And it's all about the subconscious in that fact. However, bind runes aren't sigils. That's how you create a sigil. A bind rune is not that. A bind rune is when you combine the things that the runes are. So I mentioned last time I was here when it was Norse or not. I loved that. That was absolutely fantastic. that Hagalaz is hail. You wouldn't necessarily incorporate that in a bind rune. Although it corresponds with the sound H, you wouldn't necessarily want to invite hail, a destructive force that wipes away everything to make room for new growth. You wouldn't necessarily want that in a bind rune to get a new car. That means you're going to have a crash and it's going to write it off, and then your payout is going to get you a new car. Like, you don't want to lose your leg in the process. So, you know, bind runes can be quite complicated, and you've done it in a way that I would probably suggest is the safest. You've taken the correspondences of those runes and you've put them together. But again,
because I don't know them well enough to put my own interpretation on it.
Exactly.
I'm just taking it at the face value that I have as is, rather than like you're saying, oh, well, it means this, so da 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 da. You know, it's
yeah,
just this is the standard
yeah,
term for it, or the standard word for it, so that's what I'll go with.
Yeah. And
find the most appropriate combination, like you say. I'm not going to put two together. Like,
no, and that's probably the easiest way of creating a bind rune, and that in itself creates a spell, and that in itself can be then thrown at someone's head, or like flung into like the garden, or like inscribed on a door, or whatever it is that you really need to accomplish. You know, another way of doing runes is the one that we've all heard of. It's divination. And casting lots and casting runes. So does anybody do that? Does anybody use runes in divination? So have you got an example of how you would do it?
There are a few different patterns. I use the Cross of Thor quite regularly.
Okay.
It's one that's fairly easy. It's only five runes.
So you do like a spread, like a layout?
Yes.
And you so rummage five runes, and then
yeah,
one,
and
two.
And the person to draw the runes and place
yeah,
them down
yeah,
in a sequence.
Yeah.
And then each one of those has a meaning. You know,
yeah, they have meanings for their positions,
yeah,
much like in tarot, much like yeah, in.
It's very similar to like bone throwing.
Yes, like bone throwing. It the positions, the houses that you create on the
yeah,
spread, and then they relate to different things, and then they help you interpret the runes in different directions. Do you have the same sort of practice, or
yeah,
is it the
yeah,
same
yeah,
sort of?
I'll do sometimes the Celtic cross.
Yep.
And do the spread, pretty much the same as you would do cards.
Would do cards,
yeah,
yeah.
Turn them all upside down, wiggle them around a bit.
Yep.
Let them choose 10.
Yeah.
And then put them in the place.
Fantastic.
And read it that way.
That's brilliant.
I do like the casting of bones, so I'll throw them
yep,
depending on where they are and the position of the ones that are facing upwards. They're the ones I'll use.
So there's only one account in any of the writings that we have on Norse or heathen practices. I'm going to use the term heathen because it's a bit broader. And yours is the one that is accounted for. However, we don't know whether they were talking about runes, bones, cabbages, skulls, we have no idea. The idea was that you threw your medium of choice, and then where how they landed determined, you know, then how you read them. And the idea was that they were staves. So the staves were cast, and how they stood upright, whichever ones were upright were then read, and they were read in a circular fashion. It doesn't mean any of them are wrong. It really, really doesn't, you know, because there's no guarantee that at any point it was runes or that it wasn't runes. So quite frankly, you can read them however you like. And, you know, spirituality is a thing that is meant to evolve the same way that we are. So I think it's important that we do something. And do you get results?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Then who gives a shit? You get results, then that's all you need. So we've talked about writing with them. We've talked about divination with them. You've talked about writing with them specifically for spells.
Yeah.
Does anybody else use them for spell work? You? How would you use runes for spell work?
The same sort of thing. It's looking at the attribution of particular runes, writing them into whatever way you want it to go, with a start, beginning, and an end.
Yeah.
And then create it either on parchment or something that burns.
So written. The runes are written.
I also make demon jars.
And
I use the runes.
Carved into wood and then burnt.
I make demon jars.
Can we go out one day? Is that all right? Can we go for a massive drink and chat about demon jars?
Yeah.
And God, and breaching and open. Oh, marvellous, yes. Nice to meet you. Lovely to see you. So nice. You're my new best friend. Demon jars, my God. I'll throw one of them at somebody. Why do I keep throwing people in this talk? Can somebody tell me what, like, what trauma I've had that I'm like keeping down? Anyway, never mind. We'll unpack that later. But demon jars might have to be something we discuss and bring out. Yeah, that'd be fun. That was a bit off topic. What was I talking about? Right, so how we use runes. I'm going to focus a bit on, like, within regards to spells and magic. Now, something that is quite nice about runes is that we may not have their language, but we still have their sounds. And there's something called galdr in heathen magic and heathen practice. Does anybody know what that is? Anybody heard of that before?
It's ringing a distant bell.
Ringing a distant bell? No, that's close. It's about sound. You're not wrong. So galdr is an old Anglo-Saxon word that means or has roots in the meaning of to sing. So you can sing the runes and chant them into doing things. Because they are generally combined with vowel sounds, you have things like fehu, which is, you know, fehu. You can chant fehu to bring forth wealth and to channel that energy into what you're doing. And even if I don't have the ability to write a rune into what I'm doing, I can intone a rune into what I'm doing. And when I found out about it, it was one of the greatest things I ever kind of learned, because it meant if I needed strength, or if I was in a situation where I was the last person stepping into a meeting or something, I could just get to the door and I could go, Uruz, and I could feel it and just chant it deep in my belly. And then walk into the room knowing that I have strength. But no matter what, Uruz is, I am embodying strength, the strength of the Uruk, the strength to not only be powerful and be a presence, but also deflect attack. You know, Uruz, the Uruk, was a great big cow, really. It was a massive thing with horns. It was absolutely massive. They're extinct now, but they were hunted. But they were hunted in a way whereby, you know, they were also respected. They were a symbol of strength, because not only were they really, really difficult to kill, but they were very, very yielding. What they produced from the hunting of an Uruk was a huge bounty for the people that were hunting them. So they not only had strength in themselves and they could put up a fight, but that fight and that power was then given in bounty to the people once you secured the kill and you actually managed to hunt what you needed as food and materials and, you know, stuff for your people and your tribe or your village. I was talking about galdr. There's more to it. There is more to it. I've lost my train of thought.
It sounds very similar to, like, folkish charms.
It is very. It is very similar. There are.
Which I imagine is probably when they crossed over would be.
Yeah. A lot of what we have in the English language with regards to that comes from Anglo-Saxon. There are a set of Anglo-Saxon runes. I have a book here by a lovely, lovely lady called Susan Rance. She is a member of OBOD. She's somebody I've spoken to frequently. She's absolutely wonderful, and she wrote a book on the English runes, and there are, I think, 28 English runes, and this is all very, very new to me, so you'll have to forgive me, but they are known as the Younger Futhorc, and they are specifically Anglo-Saxon. I'm studying them because here, Northamptonshire, and this area would have been Anglo-Saxon, you know, at the time when runes were a thing that was part and parcel of life. This would have been an Anglo-Saxon sort of area, and the runes that you would come across would have been the Elder Futhorc. And a lot of my practice as a druid is kind of rooted in Anglo-Saxon practices and Anglo-Saxon places around where I live, so it just makes sense. But there's a bit that she writes about Galdur, so I'll just write her in read her introduction to it. It is likely that the early English put trust in the effect of the voice, and this is certainly true today. We sing our children to sleep, and we talk about people, yeah, with hypnotic voices. Ah, there we go, finished the sentence, it makes sense. The early English had enchanters and they practiced Galdur. The enchanter's craft was that Galdur. Today we tend to think of this magic in a supernatural context, but to the early English living in a more animistic society, it was natural, not supernatural. It was just words, sounds, songs for things that existed. The right words sung the right way with the right gestures could influence and bend the path of the web towards a different outcome in weird. So the concept of weird is that the web of weird is that weave of fate. And what you do with the runes is you influence that web so that you pull one string aside and you reweave the weird and the web of fate so that now your intention is part of it. Does that make sense? That's like a massively broken down version. It's more complicated, but you could go on forever about it. In essence, the enchanter would sing to persuade herbs or items or spirits to help him, her cure illness or produce an effect or to inflict an effect and to change something in the web of weird, in the written fate that the Norns look after, guard and watch over. So although we can write it, we can also say it, we can do all sorts of things. There are also gestures for the runes. If you want to kind of put a rune forward, you can create hand signs for the runes. Does anybody know about the I think they're called the mala or the mudra, that's it, you know it. The mudra in India, which are like these hand signs.
Oh, yes.
Yes, so you see them in images and statues of deities in Hinduism. They are hand signs that mean certain things. I have no idea about mudras, I just know that they're a thing and that's what they are. But there are also hand signs you can use for runes. This isn't an ancient practice, this is a modern practice, this is a new practice. And it has applications. You can create hand signs to instill something or invoke or bring the power of a rune to a space, much like you could write it with your wand in the ether and force it out somewhere upon a space to create wealth or abundance or positivity or joy. And I think that's Wunjo, isn't it? Joy, the joy rune. It looks like a P, sounds like a W, really complicated because why not? And I think that's all really, really exciting because, you know, you've got this really diverse tool that, you know, you say runes to people and they go, oh yeah, letters. And it's like, yes, And then they go, you can divine with them. And you're like, yes. And then that seems to be where it kind of stops. Then you get a few people who go, then I can create a spell with it. And I'm thinking, that's brilliant. You're still writing them. But there's so much more to them. You have the sounds of them. You have not only that, but the things that they represent. So if we go right back to the beginning and I speak specifically about the Elder Futhark, the Aets, I'm probably saying that wrong. Am I saying that wrong? Likely saying it wrong.
You spell it, I've known it as A-Y-E-T-T.
Oh no, that might be it. That might be it. A-Y-E-T-T.
Yeah, Aet.
Aet. Oh, I have no idea.
But as you say,
it sounds like eight, and it is eight.
Which is a way of remembering that it's eight.
That it's eight, yeah.
Eight in each group.
They're associated with three goddesses. The first eight are associated with Freya. The second eight are associated with...
Tyr.
Tyr, yeah, because they start with Tiwaz. And the last eight are associated with Heimdall. And... you know, those three gods look after those influences within that eight, within that set. So you've not only got like some sounds and you've got some items, things described by runes like the Auroch or hail or ice or joy or the cycle of a wheel or the riding of a horse or the man, a man being human, or Kenaz, the torch. You've also got this idea that they are governed by specific gods that govern those powers, you know, and you can take it as far as you really, really want to, or you can make it as simple as you really, really want to and just draw three runes, past, present, future, and tell people something that they want to know. And that's my talk on runes. Short and sweet, but has anybody got any questions?
Interesting that you ended up on the past, present, future, because that's what I used to use with everything, cards or whatever, and it got pruned down, because I thought, well, I'm not interested in the past is past, I can't do anything about it, it doesn't bother me at all, so forget it. So I stopped doing the past one, and I ended up, whether it was cards or runes, one.
Yeah.
One card, or you're talking about casting runes now, shake the bag up, hand in, pick one. part of the problem I find with them is I don't know them well enough to think in runes.
Oh, I see, yeah.
So I need some sort of crib sheet.
There's nothing wrong with a crib sheet.
If I'm writing something for a spell jar or a cotty or something, I would like something there to check.
Yeah.
And,
I feel that way about most divination.
Yeah.
Three books in front of me, like, which one does it mean?
Oh, it's always good to have. And it's one of those things, it's a widely discussed topic. There's people known as runologists, which is just incredible. I'd love to be a runologist. I'm never going to happen. I'm not that clever. But a couple of the books I've brought with me, for example, Suzanne's book, I've brought another one called Helruna by Jan Fries. This is an awesome book. It's a bit dated. Actually, it's very dated. And it includes a couple of things that I would not recommend. However, you take that out and actually it's a very in-depth and immersive book. It's more of an experience with regards to reading this book than it is just a reference book. It gives you lots and lots of information. It gives you not only divination or how to write with the runes. There are multiple ways as well to write the runes. You can have them as something called Odin's Window, where they're out in a circle. Has anybody seen Fionn's Window? No? Okay. The Rosicrucian cross?
Yep.
Yes? With all the Hebrew letters in like a rose around, like little petals. The idea of that is that you then cast a wand forward and you do each letter, and that shape is that word that you've then written as a shape because you've pointed at each letter. So you've said Yod Heh Vav Heh, and that's like the name of God. So you could do exactly the same thing with Odin's Window. Fionn's Window is Irish, and that's using the Oum to do exactly the same thing. So it'd be a wand gesture, would be an Irish word for hope or love or fuck off, and all those sorts of things. And Odin's window is the same thing. It's a ring with the runes in it, and then you're not drawing the rune, you're invoking a word of power. So you have a word of power that you can feel, that you want to invoke fire, or you want to invoke, let's go to love again, then you just spell the word. You don't have to understand the Norse language, you don't have to understand the Anglo-Saxon word, you don't have to use the original spelling, because that's not necessarily how magic works. Magic is, it doesn't always need translating. Sometimes it's, you know, enough to have your intention, and the runes are things that just bolster, and it's like having little allies that go and do that thing for you as well. Something else I wanted to mention about the runes is that there's school of thought around them as well, is that they are individuals. They are individual spirits of things. They came forward as spirits to Odin. He learned their names. That's important. A thing that has a name is a thing that is autonomous. They came forward and they expressed themselves to Odin. They weren't shown to him. They revealed themselves, which shows a level of autonomy, which means that runes can come forward and make themselves known to you. When you kind of open that door to them, it kind of opens a whole new world of experiencing them, because then all of a sudden you're just like, I see them everywhere, why leave me alone? And they do come forward and become like a massive part of, you know, your practice, which is why I am now researching the younger Futhark, because those runes keep popping up. I understand the older Futhark really, really well and feel like I've wasted my time, because all this time, the younger Futhark have been knocking on my door and I've just been missing it, just that little tiny bit. But maybe it was the gateway drug to the better ones, I don't know. That's maybe my route to the ones I need to know.
The other thing I was going to say is that for me, they're not just letters, but each rune conveys a word, whether
yep.
it's fire, ice, water, man, horse, whatever,
mm-hmm.
but also conveys a wider meaning. Of, you know, almost a story in itself. And so you could almost write by using each rune as either a word or even as a concept, to sort of draw a thing to...
Yeah, it's the implication of the word, like Clint was saying before with the oxen thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, hunting it, and then it was, yes, as the hunt, strength... prowess, but then there's the abundance that comes out of it, so it's a wider picture.
Yeah, it's a shared strength. The exact thing you're talking about can be expressed with the runes Reido and Eowas. Reido is the wheel.
Yes.
Eowas is the horse. Both of which get you from point A to point B. However, Reido is just a tool by which you traverse from one place to another. It is just the means by which you travel. Eowas is the relationship you have with the horse that gets you to where you're going. So although they're both about from point A to point B, they're very different, very, very different. You know, if you ever get Eowas, you know that the journey is all about relationships. If you ever get Reido, you have to know that you've picked the right train ticket, bus pass, whatever, you know, tool it is, whatever thing it is that's getting you there, you have to make sure it's the right one, you have to trust it, you know? And there's lots of these tiny little kind of almost like tricks or fluctuations in the rules whereby you'll have a couple of runes that kind of mean the same thing. You have one that is... Dagaz is day, isn't it? And there's another one that means harvest. What's the one that means harvest? I'm searching my brain and I'm stuck. Well, there's one that means harvest and one that means day. And they're both effectively about a passage of time. One, however, is about you know, the reaping that you get from that passage of time, and the other is about what you've planned, how you plan, and how you put forward an idea, you know. And it's really good. The one rune I will always use, and the one rune I would always invite people to learn is Isa, ice, stop. And it's the easiest one to do, because if you want to get something to stop, the hand sign is that. It's just the straight line with your palm facing whatever direction, but a straight line in front of you, and you just push it from the back of your hand, from like the what's that bit of your palm called? Like that's the heel, isn't it? But where your little finger is, so from your little finger out, you push it forward, and you just focus on whatever it is. You point at whatever it is that you want to stop, and you focus on ice of it encasing whatever you're pointing Isa at, and it's stopping it dead in its tracks. And you'll be surprised how many times it works. Absolutely surprised how many times it works. Especially on people who are doing kinedin. And it's really, really nice to just sit there with your hands, just sat there going, freeze, you bastard. Just shut the fuck up, free Isa, ice, ice, ice. And, you know, and they're like, they stop. Even if it's just to go, the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, that's it.
Even if it's just go, what are you doing? You're being a bit weird. And you're just like, oh, at least you stopped. Like, it works. They're really, really cool. Really, really cool. Has anybody got any other questions before I shut the fuck up?
Yeah, if you're making runes, are there any types of wood that are preferable?
Nope. Clay. Yours are clay. Mine are, no idea. From friend. And they're burnt onto bits of wood that she cut out of her garden. By the way, if any of you want to come and have a look, you're very welcome to fondle my bits. So that's absolutely fine. So you can do all sorts. There is a thing you may, and I'm rather an advocate for it. I quite like blood magic, but that's a topic in itself. And there is something about blooding runes, but that's a deep topic. And something that probably needs conversation in maybe a smaller group, and not really something you would necessarily bring up all the time.
I have my room set made by room master, and they're on black obsidian, and I give blood, sorry about this, semen, but it's mixed into the paint or the texture to be added to the stones, so the stones.
She's not bonded.
It's life. It's giving
life. I think the only rumour or thing I've heard, and I'm not entirely sure about it, but it kind of makes sense, is that the blood, there's only one blood that you don't use, and that's menstrual blood. And that has something to do with the fact that it's about sharing your life, and menstrual blood has a purpose for another life. No. It has a purpose for another life. You see, so menstrual blood is the blood that is given for another life that could have been. Does that make sense?
It's also being shed.
Whereas it's not being given. It's meant to be like a sacrifice and a bond. And menstrual blood has different connotations and doesn't necessarily suit to that sort of practice. Mm-hmm. So, because it's... because menstrual blood is directly tied into a life-giving process. And if that follows through to completion, it's a life that then no longer belongs to you. Mm. And these runes need to be directly tied to you. And I think that makes sense, but in the same respect, my brain goes, could also be a load of bollocks. So it's up to you. You could say the same with semen. Yeah, you could. Which is why in my head I go, could be a load of bollocks. So yeah, I don't put spunk on anything other than people. So it's fine. That's so gross, and I can't believe it came out of my face, and I'm going to blame the Tourette's. I'm so sorry, because that's just wrong, so, and so funny in its own way. I should have left the Karen sticker on, then nobody would know who I actually am, and then that would be all right. Anybody got any other questions or anything they want to add?
Just one quick one.
Yeah.
I've got a room set with a book that I've got, but I tried to use it. but in it, it had the 24.
Yep.
And the blank rune.
Yeah, it's always a blank rune.
Oh, the blank rune. So the blank rune didn't exist until the 1960s. So...
Is that my dad's mind's got a blank rune as well?
Yeah, the blank rune did not exist until the 1960s. There has been no archaeological or any sort of empirical evidence about the blank rune. It's just been something that's added, been added since runes have been used for divination. Again... Like I mentioned, your practice was the only one that's been documented. There's still no evidence that that was even runes. So there's no evidence that the runes were ever part of divination. And the blank rune is just something that doesn't mean it doesn't have meaning. That doesn't mean it doesn't work. And that doesn't mean that if you get results from it, that they're wrong. It's just that it's only existed since then.
I mean, I've used the blank rune early days. And it, I used to give it to the person who's asking the question to hold.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was casting the pudding, I shook it and dropped them. Then I read from where the blank rune was, saying that was their journey, that's where they started from.
Oh, that's kind of cool. So the blank rune is no longer a rune, it becomes the querent.
Yeah, and then you take the reading on as far away from that.
That's interesting.
Shows you where they are.
Yeah.
Within the field of the runes.
That's really cool. Oh, I like that.
You seem to work on that.
Yeah. The way I interpret runes is that I have a... I have a bowl of water. I have a bag of coins. I've saved them over years. They're the big £5 silver jubilee coins. Does everybody remember those from years back? And I've got a load of them. So they're in like this big coin purse thing that's all beaded and beautiful and gay. And I make the querent pay the well because that's where the runes came from. So I make the person asking the question ask the runes by paying a fee for the information that they're getting. And then it takes all the onus off me because I'm then just the interpreter, which makes me feel much better. I tend to do the same thing with tarot. Like, the tarot cards are doing it. Like, don't moan at me if, like, the information's wrong because I'm not saying call. I'm just telling you what pretty pictures mean. And, you know... And I think there's an element of also because I feel that the runes are independent, you know, autonomous beings in their own right. If they have something to say, they don't need me to say it. They just need to be given license to speak on their own behalf. And I think that process of allowing them to come from the well and returning to that kind of source for the runes kind of gives them back their autonomy in some respects. And then I just cast runes and see what comes up and read them in a circle. I just cast a handful and see what happens. And then, like you, just whatever's right up. And then I cut and I read them in a spiral from the centre onwards. And that's it. But,
yeah. Whether you do a cast or whether you do a spread, you've also got to look at each rune in relation to the others that are next to it or around it. Because it's more likely than not, it is telling you something of a... bigger of a story.
Yeah, of course. It's
in the runes individually.
It's like if Hagalaz, which is hail, which is about the destruction of crops, and it's much like the tower card. Like, it's everything's going to come crumbling down, but you have to remember you can't build unless you have room to plant foundations. So it's important that the field is stripped before you can plant anything new. Hail is just a destructive way of that happening. So if Hagalaz is followed by Isa, ice, it means that you're not going to be able to move on that field. So, yes, the destruction is going to happen. Yes, you're going to have a blank slate. But I'm really sorry. You're going to be stuck there for a while. And, you know, and these things are really important. You need to understand the relationships between them. And, you know, if you get Rado and Airwaz, it means you've got a horse and cart, which is fantastic. Fantastic. It means you're going to know the bus driver whilst you're on the bus. So it's all about relationships. Make sure you sweet talk him, otherwise you probably won't get to where you're going. But I'm going to wrap it up there. And that's runes for you. Thanks very much, everybody. Oh, fucking loud.